Dismiss all anxiety from your minds and enter into the Call Me Catholic Show with your host, Peggy Normandin.
Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious, if there is any excellence and if there is anything worthy of praise, well, we're going to get to it in the next hour. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you have arrived at the Call Me Catholic Show, where we celebrate, explore, and affirm our Catholic identity so we can say to the world each and every morning, oh yeah, you can call me Catholic. Hey, I'm joined by my engineer and studio mate, Jimmy G. Morning, Jimmy.
Morning, Peggy. It's a great day. It's a lovely day.
Well, it's always a lovely day when I got you at the dials there. So we're coming to you from the Tower of Hope on the beautiful Christ Cathedral campus in Garden Grove through the airwaves of Immaculate Heart Radio. Now, we're still kind of evolving as a show, wouldn't you say that, Jimmy?
Yeah, you could say that.
Yeah. This is our sixth show,
I think. This is number six.
Yeah, so we got a few ground rules. We have no proselytizing, no chastising. We don't chastise anybody.
Sounds good.
No canonizing. That'd be cool, though, wouldn't it?
We're just sugary sweet.
It'd be nice to be able to canonize somebody, but we need a pope for that.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but you know, Francis, he surprises people. We should leave the door open just in case he wants to drop by.
We're hoping that he might come by L.A., SoCal.
Yeah, well, we're going to greet him, be ready for him. So, like I said, here on the Call Me Catholic Show, we try to seek out the light. We look for the good, and we celebrate the fun, the good news of being Catholic. But, you know, friends, if we're going to fully embrace our identity as Catholic Americans, sometimes we have to face the ugly violations of the things that we know to be true. We have to stand up to them. And we can't stand up to them with fear or with hatred, but we stand up to them with the truth. And the truth is that life is precious. Its dignity is sacred. And every life at conception bears the image and likeness of God, our Creator, even if we can't see it yet. And we should stand proud and unified in our commitment to defend life always. If we are Catholic, we must be pro-life. It isn't always easy, and it isn't always pretty. Just ask our first guest, Anne McElhaney. Anne and her husband, Philem, are the very successful documentary filmmakers who are about to start production on the true but very grim story of Kermit Gosnell, a former physician who was convicted in 2011 of, among many other things, first-degree murder and the slaughter of hundreds of newborn babies at his illegally run abortion mill in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. His grisly story surprisingly received scant coverage by the media until he received his final sentence of life imprisonment in 2013. The seats in the courtroom that were reserved for the media went pretty much unoccupied during the trial, and the story of his heinous pattern of practicing abortion with these weird experimental techniques and just killing and discarding new life at his clinic went untold. But that's about to change thanks to the courage and determination of Anne McElhaney and her husband, Philem. Anne McElhaney, welcome to the Call Me Catholic Show.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, we're so grateful that you've decided to make this story and that you're going to share it with us. So tell us, when did you first commit to telling this awful story of Kermit Gosnell?
Well, my husband, Philem, was actually promoting our last film, Frack Nation, in Pennsylvania, and he was traveling around Pennsylvania and spent some time in Philadelphia. And, you know, as you do when you're a journalist and have a few days off, what do you do but go to the local court? And he went to the local court where this trial was ongoing. And, of course, as you said very eloquently, was receiving no national coverage, so he hadn't heard much about it. But he went in and first of all, noticed exactly what you mentioned. He noticed these empty courtroom seats reserved for journalists, completely empty. And what struck him immediately, having been a crime reporter in Northern Ireland and being a court, filled court for even drunk driving offences in Ireland, he noticed this empty court. And then projected on the wall were pictures of these babies that Kermit Gosnell was accused of murdering and that he had, in fact, murdered. Mm-hmm. And these extraordinary photographs were receiving no national attention. And he thought, oh, wow, this is quite a story. And he came back here and we became very quickly committed to making sure this story was known nationally.
Well, after that, at what point after your husband came home was the conviction announced?
Actually, very shortly after that, about a month after that, Kermit Gosnell was sentenced on May the 13th, 2013. Mm-hmm. So quite soon after that, the case ended and the sentencing period began. And obviously, as your audience may or may not know, Kermit Gosnell was convicted of the murder, first-degree murder of three babies. The used a sample, basically. I mean, obviously, they couldn't go after each of the cases that he had done because he had done so many. Mm-hmm. And some of the evidence has been, a lot of the evidence has been destroyed by him. But also for the manslaughter of Karnamaya Munger, a refugee from Bhutan who died because a 15-year-old is the anesthetic on her and who basically drugged her to death.
Wow. Well, so at that point, did you begin this journey toward the production of and the writing of Gosnell the movie?
Yes. I mean, we had never been involved in the abortion debate or even actually have never thought about abortion. But this story brought up, as journalists, I mean, we were very curious about the story, and because of the fact that the journalists were choosing not to cover it, even though the journalism rule is, if it bleeds, it bleeds. And a story like this, as gruesome as it all and all that it is exactly the fodder, usually, for journalists. And why was it that on this occasion journalists were choosing not to cover this? And a lot of journalists, a lot of national journalists, used a lot of very lame excuses. They said it was a local story. But however, you know, Jodi Arias killing her boyfriend was never a local story. It was national news. You know, Casey Anthony was national news. So that was very bogus. And they said things like it was too gruesome to cover. But that's also nonsense. That's absolutely nonsense. You know, the media love covering extremely gruesome
Charles
trials.
Mason, then this is a serial killer, really.
And absolutely. What really was happening was that this story was forcing people to acknowledge what late-term abortion really looks like and is legal in this country. I mean, what Kermit Gosnell did, if he had done it in the womb, it would be perfectly legal. And I think by having the graphic testimony and the graphic photographs, people got to know a lot more about legal abortion in America. Mm-hmm. And the people who sat there and heard it and went through that testimony and the jurors didn't like what they heard.
I wonder how they picked those jurors. You know, if we couldn't get media to cover it, how do you find jurors? And there's the disparity, I think, is that the average man is very open and sees the truth in this. Media, for some reason, they don't. They kind of dance around it. They stay away from it. But the jurors saw it, right?
Yeah, the jurors were extraordinary and were very well commended by everyone involved. You know, they had an awful task. There were actually two sets of jurors. There were the jurors in the trial, but then there were the jurors who sat for 2 years in the grand jury and listened to the most awful testimony over 2 years to decide whether or not God himself should actually go to trial. And these people, as you say, ordinary people, you know, it's actually a very good point you make. Very ordinary people, when they hear truth, when they see evidence of this kind of thing, they have very little difficulty in working out what is right and what is wrong. Most people get that. Yes, 7-month-old baby with a severed spinal cord, and they don't think that's right, you know.
Show it to me once, and we know, you know, you don't have to.
Yes, and I don't need a nuance. I don't need any nuance on this. There's no spinning this. And you probably are aware that the story, you know, the Kirsten Powers from USA Today, who's, you know, a great columnist, she wrote an article that really changed everything in this case, and she made the point, a really amazing point. She said that people who think that what Gosnell did was disgusting, you've got to understand that it's legal to do that inside the womb. And if you think both that there's a difference, it's morally irreconcilable. Mm-hmm. It's still murder, basically. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really what the reason that the media stayed away.
Well, why did the trial take 2 years? I mean, did he have a good defense?
No, the trial took 2 months.
Oh, 2 months. I'm sorry.
Sat for 2 years prior to the trial to try and wade through all this extraordinary evidence that was discovered when they raided the clinic in the first place. Because a lot of people didn't know what to make of what they found. They didn't know what to make of these severed feet that they found on shelves in the back room. They didn't know what to make of any of this.
Well, I was going to say that, and also when it's in another country, when it's across the ocean, you can sort of look at it and be more objective. When it's in your own backyard and it's being done within the confines of your country's, you know, laws of freedom, it's just horrifying. And it's hard to accept.
And people were very shocked. But I think one of the things that's very interesting about what we're doing and what we're trying to do with this film, and people can go to gosnellmovie.com and give us $1 right now, by the way, if you vote for what we're trying to do, is find out the truth about what goes on in America. I mean, one of the things that was amazing was that the prosecutors, two women, both mothers, who prosecuted this case, Joanne Pescatore and Christine Wexler, neither of them knew that the limit on abortion in Pennsylvania was 24 weeks. And they literally looked at each other and said, oh my God, that's 6 months. Yeah. 6 months, so it's legal in Pennsylvania to abort a baby at 6 months. And everyone knows what a pregnant woman at 6 months looks like.
She looks like she's carrying a baby.
Correct, yeah, she's not carrying anything else.
No.
And no one says, how's the fetus doing? No one ever says that.
No.
People say, well, how is the baby? And how are you feeling? And how is the baby? And is the baby moving? And it's a baby. That's a baby. And the idea that that's okay to kill a baby, that is at least people should know that that's what the law. And most people don't. And they're certainly going to know it after they see our film.
But Kermit Gosnell was even terminating babies in the final weeks. I mean, these babies were really what we would call premature babies, and they were being delivered and then killed, which is really the horrible nightmare. Well, Anne, I want you to stay with us because I'd like to share with our listeners the formation of the movie, the building of the funds. You have a historic crowdfunding record right now for building the funds to do this movie. You're almost there. And I'd like to hear more about how that movie's going to look on the screen. So we're going to take a short break, but when we come back, filmmaker Anne McElhaney will tell us more about her commitment to bring convicted abortionist Kermit Gosnell's story to the big screen. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to the Call Me Catholic Show on Immaculate Heart Radio. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
May 18th through May 23rd is Wills and Trusts Week in the Diocese of Orange and is proudly sponsored by the Orange Catholic Foundation and the Catholic Cemeteries. Take advantage of one of the free sessions and learn how to protect those you love with a new or updated estate plan. Through proper planning, the legacy of love and care you leave for your family and friends can be encouraging and inspiring. If you have questions on how to begin or update your estate plan, please join us at one of the many sessions planned at convenient parish locations throughout our diocese during the week of May 18th. For a complete list of locations and schedule, visit our website, orangecatholicfoundation.org. That's orangecatholicfoundation.org. Or call 714-282-3021. That's 714-282-3021. Admission is free and reservations are not necessary, but welcome. Details are available at orangecatholicfoundation.org. We look forward to seeing you soon.
Hi, everybody. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to the Call Me Catholic Show. Our guest this morning is Anne McElhaney, documentary filmmaker and truth teller, who with her husband is bringing to the screen the story of former Dr. Kermit Gosnell, now serving a term of life in prison for his murderous work as an abortionist. And, you know, one of the interesting things that I noticed in kind of reading about this case was that Kermit Gosnell was presented as having a sort of duality. He was the evil abortionist, but then he had this sort of strange philanthropic side. And I was sort of wondering if the defense was playing that up or if in your search for characterizing him on the screen, you're addressing that at all, or whether it was just pure myth.
No, I mean, according to himself and everyone we've spoken to, he was, you know, looked upon very well, actually, in the neighborhood. He was sort of a community organizer of sorts. He had come back to work in Philadelphia among a poor community, and he had been involved in a drug rehabilitation scheme, and he was very involved with the flower community, basically. He grew rhododendrons and won prizes for his irises, so he was very involved.
A strange irony.
Yeah, with all these kind of things. And you're totally right. He certainly was presenting himself to the world as a kindly community organizer who cared about the poor. That's certainly something that he was attempting to do. But his behavior inside the clinic, from everything that we know, from everyone we've spoken to, was anything but kindly. He was extraordinarily cruel to the patients and obviously to the children, the victims who he murdered. His callous, cruel, unnatural, diabolical behavior is obviously well documented.
Well, almost psychopathic, really.
Yes, very much so. I mean, you know, very much so. And he laughed. I mean, he laughed at the size of some of the babies. Mm. He ate food in the clinic. He had two cats walking around in the clinic.
Yes, the cat feces everywhere. Oh, it's just grim.
Bodies were found when they raided.
Now, this movie is not going to be a documentary per se. You're scripting it. It's going to use original actors, and it's like what I guess you would call a docudrama. Is that how you would categorize it?
Yeah, I would say that it's kind of more like actually a real Hollywood movie. It's very much a crime drama, actually, and how he got discovered was very much a crime story with a great policeman at the very center of the story who actually discovered Gosnell by accident. Because he was actually selling narcotics. He was illegally selling scripts for oxycodone.
Gosnell was doing that too? Oh, my goodness.
That's the only reason he was found. That's the only reason he was discovered. So, yeah, we'll have actors, we'll have, you know, locations, we'll have, you know, almost a love story, actually. Because the thing that we're going to focus on a lot in this film are the heroes the people who made sure that that man will still no more children in this life.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, he will never see the light of day, and he will never be free again. And those people are the people that will be the stars of the film, as police officer and an assistant district attorney. Mm-hmm. These are amazing people, and people that can, you know, because I think sometimes people hear about the story and they think, oh my God, how could we watch that? You can really watch this film because it's very uplifting. In the end, it's very uplifting. Justice is done.
Well, your eyes will always go to the light, you know, and like in any good crime drama, you have villains and you have heroes. And, you know, Anne, when I was first talking to you about this story, I remember thinking, I'm not sure that I'm really comfortable presenting such a dark and sort of foreboding story on this program. And you pointed out to me what beautiful examples of courage and honesty and just generous, brave spirits that broke the story, that stood up to the sort of evil that he was, and it must have been very daunting to face that clinic and see the truth of it.
Yes.
So those are always the people that you're going to take away in your heart after you watch a film like this.
No, absolutely. And they're actually super inspiring. The police officer involved, incredibly inspiring, a very religious man, a Catholic, just for your audience to know that.
Mm-hmm.
He's a father of five. He's from a family of 11. Incredible man who has suffered a lot of tragedy in his own life. And it's just an extraordinary example of, you know, of courage, of moral courage, mm-hmm. of doing the right thing and never giving up. He never, ever gave up. Mm-hmm. He pursued this case to the bitter end, and he was there the day that Kermit Gosling was sentenced, and he cried in the courtroom. And those are the people that matter.
Yes.
You know, in the end, you know, good does triumph over evil. That's actually what happens in the end. And so this story is very much a moral story of a fight between good and evil, and good wins. And that's really important for the audience. And the children who were silenced, who were snuffed out mm-hmm. so violently, their voices are heard, and those people become important, and they're very important in this film.
And those are the people that we identify with. You know, you really see what side of this. If you've ever had any ambivalence on this issue, you're going to sit and watch this movie and say, I want to be on that side. I want to be that man. I want to be that woman. I don't want to be one of these silent witnesses. I don't want to be in the Gosnell court. So, Anne, the entertainment world is not necessarily known for its pro-life activism, and yet you're making a full-blown Hollywood movie. Will finding qualified talent, both technically and theatrically, be a challenge? Will most actors and crew avoid this kind of morally charged film, or do you already have some of that lined up for the show?
We have some of that lined up, and you'd be quite surprised. I mean, you know, people think, you know, obviously Hollywood, you know, there's a lot of disastrous people around here, but, you know, not everywhere. Patricia Heaton, for example, a lot of your audience would know that she was one of the biggest tweeters. She was a very early
pro-life
champion,
person,
example, and a pro-life person. You know, people, Kevin James, who a lot of your audience know as the comedian Kevin James,
mm-hmm.
a huge pro-lifer. He prays outside abortion clinics.
Wow.
You wouldn't expect that of a guy like that, who's a multimillionaire and a hugely talented guy. Doesn't look like the kind of guy who'd do that. So you'd be surprised. We're finding unbelievable talent out there, unbelievable people who want to be involved. You'd be very surprised. It's going to be extraordinary. This is amazing. The script is unbelievable.
So you have the script is written.
The script is written. We literally just finished in the last days, and it's really quite extraordinary. People are going to hear things. There's really stuff in this film that has never been done before in a movie. And we're so proud of that. And it's extremely faithful to what actually happened.
And where did you draw the material from? What material did you use to build the story and to build the script?
We used a lot. We based a lot on the court transcripts. We bought the complete trial transcript for the 2 months that the trial went on. We have the grand jury report. We have interviews. We went numerous times to Philadelphia and interviewed the main people that were involved in the story, and you know that's what it's based on. The film is very historically accurate.
Well, of course, because it's telling the story that happened. I mean, you've got the evidence. And I know that this Gosnell movie has broken records in terms of crowdfunding because you've been building awareness of it through social media and getting incredible donations toward the production of the film. So tell us a little bit about how you've done that.
We've got incredible donations. People have sent $10,000. People have sent $10. People have sent $1. But the woman who has sent, I mean, honestly, I could be on this show for 2 hours reading letters from the people who sent us money. It is incredibly inspiring. One woman who sends us $50 every month, and will continue to do that.
Bless her heart.
Well, listen, and a woman who wrote, I wish I had these letters in front of me right now, but tell your listeners, you guys, anyone who's listening, you can go to gosnellmovie.com, read the letters in the comment section. They can see it. 604 people have written.
Wow.
And read those letters, because they would really do They would do your heart good. They would just do your heart so good. They're
so
unbelievable.
And it's Gosnell, G-O-S-N-E-L-L, movie, gosnellmovie.com, correct?
Yes, exactly.
So they can read about Gosnell, the film, but also contribute.
Gosnellmovie.com, and they can contribute there, and they can read all about the film, all about what's going on. And if they give us even a dollar, they'll get all the updates. So they'll get the news as things happen. They'll constantly get the news. And it's been incredible. And if you go over there right now to gosnellmovie.com, you'll see 27,966 people have contributed to this film so far.
And how much time did you raise that kind of money and get that kind of awareness?
The initial $2.2 million was raised in 45 days. And then only very...
Wow!
No, it's been incredible, an incredible effort. People turned up from... We have had money from 49 countries, by the way, as well.
Wow.
49 countries. People have sent money. Now, most of the money has come from the United States and from Canada and Australia and the UK, actually. But we got money from South Korea. We got money from Hungary, Romania, Russia.
How did you get the word out like that? I mean, your whole social media campaign is fascinating. How did you do that?
A lot of work. It's a lot of work and a lot of hitting the phone, doing a lot of radio interviews. And people told other people. And honestly, if you look at the page, as I said, go to gosnellmovie.com, go to the place called Comments, and read
comments.
The kind of things people have written. And people have written and said, you know, and I've opened it now. Thank you for all that you do for bringing awareness to people about critical social issues. God bless you. This should be seen by every American. The truth shall set us free.
You have struck a nerve. You have struck a nerve with America. And this could be a big game changer for this cause, Anne.
I'll tell you one thing. And any of your listeners who maybe you don't know a lot about this, but I would warn them. There is a photograph. If they want to know the photograph that changed this whole case, but I would warn them, only look at this photograph if you feel you're up to it. You can go into your Google and put in baby boy A and Gosnell, and you will see a baby there that changed everyone's mind in the court.
Mm-hmm.
That clarified everything for everyone, including us here who decided to do the film based on that child, who no longer is with us, and who died, and whose life does matter. Because of that child, Gosnell is in prison, and a lot of people have changed their mind about abortion, and so his life was not meaningless. But I would warn people, a lot of people are not able to look at those kind of photographs, but he does change hearts and minds.
Well, you can avoid the photographs, but still see the story if you choose to do that.
Yes, Go in there, look at some of those comments from people. People have written amazing things. One woman wrote and said, basically, you know, when I look at my replacement windows, my neighbors walk past, she said, and I say, best money I ever spent. And she said, when I arrive at the pearly gates and God meets me, he'll say, you gave money to the Gosnell campaign. It's the best money you ever spent.
Is that beautiful? And you know, how wonderful that you're giving people this opportunity to get on the bandwagon and to join the campaign and to join the pro-life cause by supporting your movie at gosnellmovie.com. And I love what you're doing, and give my compliments to your husband, too, because I know this is great teamwork. Thank you so much, Anne McElhaney, for being a guest on the Call Me Catholic show this morning. But mostly, thank you for investing your time and talent into such a very, very worthy project. Let's pray it's the cold shower the public needs to wake up to the sober truth about abortion. Anne McElhaney, thank you. God bless you, and God bless your work.
God bless you. Take care. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye. And again, if you'd like to find out more about Anne and her husband's work on this important film project, you can go to gosnellmovie.com. So keeping with the pro-life theme of this morning's show, our next guest, Kathleen Eaton Bravo, is a pro-life marvel. Kathleen pioneered what started out as a small, unfunded pregnancy resource center and grew into what is now a growing network of nonprofit, fully licensed pro-life medical clinics throughout Southern California. She'll share her story and her plans in our next segment, but we're going to take a quick station ID break right now. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to the Call Me Catholic show on Immaculate Heart Radio. We'll be right back. Hi there, and welcome back to the Call Me Catholic show. I'm Peggy Normandin, and in keeping with our pro-life theme this morning, I'm so blessed to have as my next guest Kathleen Eaton Bravo, founder of Birth Choice, now Obria Medical Clinics, a very successful growing network of pro-life medical clinics throughout Southern California. Welcome, Kathleen.
Hi, Peggy.
You know, Kathleen, I think Marvel Comics needs a new heroine. You know, I was thinking about this. I think you need to be the model for their next superhero, the Power Princess of pro-life. You like that?
I love it. I can see it now. And only you could do that. So I want to see the drawing at church next weekend.
Okay. Defending life and leaping across Planned Parenthood Billings in a single bound. I like it.
There you go.
You are usually speaking, spreading the good word, teaching people how to be a model for a great pro-life clinic or receiving an award. And I kind of had a silly opening for you. But since 1981, when you established your first birth choice clinic, you have grown that organization into a whole network of modern-day life-affirming medical clinics helping young women and men make smart moral choices with their behavior and their health. How has your vision changed, Kathleen, since you established your first clinic in 1981?
You know, Peggy, my story. A year before that, I walked out the back door of an abortion clinic and left my baby behind. I had left my Catholic faith and hadn't been in a church for 8 years, sat on the curb because God has a sense of humor, and he put a flat tire on my car to get my attention. And as I sat on the curb, I started crying and praying to Our Lady, and then to our Lord, and just saying, moving forward, if I could do something to make sure that women have all the information they need to make an informed decision. Because when I went out at that time, back when we had to go to the phone book, there was nothing there but Planned Parenthood and Family Planning Associates. And I ended up going to Planned Parenthood for information, but actually had my abortion at a Family Planning Associates, our two big abortion providers here in California. And that commitment stands. I opened up a women's resource center, or what you know as a pregnancy center, to just give women all the information they need. And I feel information is empowering, and empowering them to make the right decision for their baby and for themselves. And I ran three pregnancy centers within about 15 years. I'd gone from one to three throughout Orange County.
Throughout Orange County,
course,
right.
Then in 2006, I realized that women actually needed more than that. They needed a place where they can come and really get true medical care and medical services. And I also know, is when I also ran my own for-profit business, that when you look at what you're trying to do, there's a competitor. If you were a hamburger store, there's a hamburger on one side of the street store, and then there's a hamburger on the other, you know.
Or a taco, or a taco place.
Or a taco. And so I looked at it and thought, if we're going to compete against the large abortion providers, of course, in our country, it's Planned Parenthood, we have to compete from a nose-to-nose model by offering the services they provide minus abortion and contraception. And we have to do it with what we're so good at, and that is through love, compassion, non-judgmental care and services. And again, taking that message of Best Step and through medical care, education and services, really, really empowering young people to make better decisions when it comes to their sexual health and a crisis pregnancy. And that's where we are today. And we just keep moving forward as Planned Parenthood grows and expands their presence and their services.
You'll grow too.
We grow too.
And now, how do you pick your locations? Right now, you're in Southern California. I imagine you're sort of have broader vision. You're always looking ahead, always looking at the next territory. But how do you pick the locations for your clinics, Kathleen?
First, we actually, Obrea, we knew we had to change birth choice, which is sort of synonymous with the pregnancy center movement and sort of the old school ways, to a name that we can trademark nationally, that we own. And of course, today, if you did that, you have to make a word that doesn't mean anything and rebrand it to mean what we want to
say. Like Haagen-Dazs.
Yes. So we have Obrea because it was a name available, a word available, and we're branding it into a name. And we're going national.
Well, I like the OB part of it.
We love the OB part of it. If you see our logo, the OB is one color and the RIA is another, so it does bring focus to that OB. But then we went out and we decided we were going to launch this in California, and it's funny because you cannot put boundaries around God's work. And so we defined where we wanted to go, and God laughed again and said, well, I'm going to show you where you're going. We actually now are actively working in New York. We're going to South Carolina. We've been in Denver. I'm going back to Denver next week. We're going to Seattle.
Are these possible clinic destinations then for
They
you?
Are.
Wow.
And they've invited us. So what's happened is, as you know, I speak nationally, and people in the pro-life movement desperately are looking for something that has raised themselves up, a group that's raised themselves up from the norm, the pregnancy center, where you're really just doing referrals and diapers and formula, but to a clinical model that can compete for the lives and the health of our young people, and they're finding us. So they either come here or we go to them, and we sit down and we open the discussion. But I do have to say we're still concentrating on those areas in the United States that have a high number of abortion providers. So you can pretty much pick those states. They are pretty much the blue states, the liberal states, the East Coast, mm-hmm. around the Great Lakes, and, of course, Colorado, Washington, Oregon, mm-hmm. California. And so we did a Google study, a Google Earth, and said, where are the abortion providers? Where's Planned Parenthood? And if you look through the Bible Belts and through the Midwest mm-hmm. and across the, there's not a lot of abortion facilities. So we can spend time going there, but what we really want to do is we want to concentrate on those states and those areas mm-hmm. that have a high number of abortion clinics. And also you'll find those abortion providers are near universities.
No, I was just going to bring that up. It seems mm-hmm. like every time I'm in a university town,
yes.
there's a Planned Parenthood billboard right by the campus, and it's front and center. Their marketing is too good on that count, I'm afraid.
That's where they're at.
So are you going to get to some university locations, hopefully?
Well, I need some deep prayer, and I am meeting with some people in the next month, and if the opportunity works out, we'll actually launch our telemedicine program, which is what the Affordable Care has and what Planned Parenthood now has, mm-hmm. and it's, of course, Peggy, I think that people need to understand that today, I'll tell you the difference between 30 years ago or 34 years ago and today, mm-hmm. is abortion today is on your smartphone. Abortion today is right at the touch of their fingers. They don't even have to go into a clinic.
You don't have to work for it, yeah.
No, they can go on Planned Parenthood's telemedicine website. They connect to a nurse. Mm-hmm. They, just like the Affordable Care Act, some of us have, you know, do that. We talk to a nurse via Skype, mm-hmm. and then the nurse prescribes an RU-46, the abortion pill, and they abort the baby in their bedroom and flush the baby down the toilet. That's mm-hmm. the reality of abortion today. Mm-hmm. How do we meet those girls in the bedroom that aren't even going into a Planned Parenthood clinic? Mm-hmm. And, of course, what we have to do is launch our telemedicine program to counter RU-46 and abortion and get it on the smartphones, get it through social media, mm-hmm. every avenue, and so that when they go on their smartphone in their bedroom,
their language,
that
yeah.
we come up.
The Audio Girl Ministries, we spoke with those girls several weeks ago. They've developed this fabulous app called The Power of Seven that people can mm-hmm. get free. Have you heard of that one, where it's seven pro-life responses to seven pro-abortion arguments, and it yeah. gives people the language. So I love the fact that we're getting in there on this social media right there where everybody else is talking about it. We feel it in our heart, but we sometimes struggle with finding the right words to combat the other message, you know, which is
right.
loud
well,
and proud.
This is actually, it will be staffed by nurses. This is actually a licensed clinic online where it's HIPAA, and it's actually licensed through our licensing. And if this collaboration goes through, we'll launch in 23 states on 100 university campuses.
Wow. Now that is presence.
I'm not, my PR people and other people will say you shouldn't tell people that because you want to, you know, put it out there to have this great big thing. And I said, you know what? I'm putting it out there and saying we're just in the talking stage, and I need your prayers because I'm not here to blast and say, aren't we wonderful? I'm here to say I need everybody on their knees praying for this. And if this collaboration goes, we're going to be the first pro-life organization that launches an online telemedicine program to reach these young women in their bedroom when they're thinking about taking an RU-46 or even a reversal. You know, we've had four RU-46 pill reversals in the last 3 weeks. Wow. Four babies we saved.
So it's like sidewalk counseling, but it's through the
online.
You know, it's online. Yeah, that is absolutely brilliant. And our listeners heard it first here. We scooped everybody else on it, Kathleen.
You did.
So thanks. Well, you know, there's so much misunderstanding with the pro-life movement. What are your biggest obstacles right now that you're facing? Is it funding? Is it the language? Is it the culture of our world? What is it, Kathleen?
Well, number one, it's funding. You know, they say 50% of the people in this country are now pro-life, but if you read the next sentence on that Guttmacher study, only 20% feel like the life issue would in any way, shape, or form impact how they vote. So out of 50%, 20% of them say it does affect their voting, 30% of that 50% say no. But Peggy, the sad thing is only 1% say they actually fund and support a pro-life mm-hmm. organization. So funding is one, but I think the other important thing in California is AB-775. Mm. AB-775 is, to me, a bully bill being pushed through the Democratic-controlled legislative in Sacramento. It's already passed two committees, the Medical Committee, the Judiciary Committee. It's going in front of Appropriations, and they are pushing this. And even though we have Republicans on our side, we don't have the vote. What will happen when that passes? It's the pregnancy centers They went into 35 pregnancy centers. They sent young women in, and they did sort of an undercover thing and came out. But the pregnancy centers won't be affected by this. It's they're going after the medical clinics. Right. So when they look at the licensed medical clinics in California, if that law passes, we have to put up in our waiting rooms a sign saying that the law in California, that a woman has a right to receive an abortion and contraception, and this facility does not provide that. So here's a location of a facility.
Oh, no, 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 no. We can't allow that.
What I'm going to have in my clinic is an ad for Planned Parenthood on the wall, and if I don't do it, they will pull my medical license.
Okay. Well, you know, I think these are huge obstacles that need prayer, and they need education. So if our listeners want to learn more about your work and your organization and stay connected, you can sign up for regular emails from them. Go to obria.org. That's O-B-R-I-A.org. And you can follow Kathleen's incredible work. You can contribute to her work, and you can sign up for regular emails. And it's very enlightening. And also, you'll be directed as to how you can write to your legislators to encourage them to vote correctly for these things. Kathleen, we got to go, but I thank you so much, Kathleen Eaton Bravo, for taking some time out of your very busy speaking schedule to talk to us this morning. You really are a superhero in the pro-life world, and I hope God continues to bless your work.
Thank you, Peggy.
And listeners, if you'd like to learn more about OBRIA once again, go to obria.org. It's time for a quick break, but when we come back, we'll share another chapter in our My Sainted Mother series, Stories from a Catholic Life. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to the Call Me Catholic Show. I'm Peggy Normandin, and I'm mighty glad you stayed with us for this final segment of our Call Me Catholic show for today. You know, we've been so fortunate to enjoy two such prominent pro-life women as our guests this morning. Two women getting the pro-life message out there in their own way with their own particular talents. Anne McElhaney, a filmmaker, is working with her husband to bring to the big screen the story of Kermit Gosnell and the evil he perpetrated on mothers and babies by his own hands in his own abortion clinic. You can follow that film on the website GosnellMovie.com. That's G-O-S-N-E-L-L movie.com. And then Kathleen Eaton Bravo, who founded and grew the remarkable network of pro-life medical clinics, formerly called Birth Choice, now newly branded as OBRIA Medical Clinics. Learn more about that fine organization at obria.org. I'd also like to remind you about that fabulous free pro-life app called The Power of Seven. You can download it through your app store. It's free. This is a great resource for how to talk pro-life. It's seven effective pro-life replies to seven common pro-abortion arguments. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges we face in this movement, is to find the right words. It was developed by our friends at Audio Girl Ministries, so go there and find it. The Power of Seven. These are all great examples of how Catholics put their talents to work to advance a culture of life. Each of you listeners also has a talent and an opportunity to spread the good news that life is precious. And I hope our guest today inspired you to use your gifts to defend life at all stages. And remember, you can always drop me a line with your questions, comments, or suggestions for the Call Me Catholic show at peggy@callmecatholic.com. I'll look forward to hearing from you. Okay, it's time for another episode of My Sainted Mother, Stories from a Catholic Life, where we listen to these charming, recorded, but unscripted conversations of people recalling a memory, a moment, just a little slice of life from their Catholic journey. Some are silly, some are profound, some are very inspiring. But they all remind us that our lives are full of these moments that help shape our identity as Catholics. So don't forget to give your kids and your friends those moments and share the traditions and devotions that we enjoy as Catholics. Those moments last a lifetime. Today we meet Wanda and Robert, whose gifted pilgrimage to Lourdes, France was good for the body and good for the soul.
I was diagnosed with leukemia in the year 2006, and despite chemotherapy, the disease came back. My parish phoned and asked me if I wanted to go to Lourdes. Apparently, the Order of Malta takes a group of people every year that are sick to Lourdes in the hope of healing some of them.
In 1858, in the grotto of Massabielle in Lourdes, France, a small market town that lies in the foothills of the Pyrenees, the Blessed Virgin Mary appeared 18 times to Bernadette Soubirous, a 14-year-old peasant girl. She identified herself as the Immaculate Conception. Lourdes has since become one of the most famous shrines in the world, attracting more than 1 million pilgrims each year. There have been thousands of miraculous cures at this shrine.
When my parish called me, I immediately said yes, but I was very skeptical of how this was going to work. I knew about Lourdes, but I didn't know in detail just what was involved in it. The Order of Malta came out, interviewed me and my husband, and we were ultimately selected to go on the journey. When we arrived in Lourdes, there was a lot of commotion going on. There's a lot of tourists. The grottos were amazing and beautiful, and the water comes out of the grotto, and that is supposed to be the healing waters from when Saint Bernadette had her apparition with the Blessed Mother.
Wanda's husband, Robert, shares his impression.
The grotto itself, the setting of the grotto, is a very holy place in its starkness and its simplicity, and the fact that it's built into the hillside. It's just beautiful.
It was a week of events that were very beautiful. At night in the grotto, there is one of the most beautiful processions I've ever seen. You follow behind one another. In the front, there's a Blessed Mary being held up.
I think the part about the procession for me that was just beautiful was it was about 10 or 15,000 people processing at night, holding a candle, singing beautifully. It was probably the most spiritual moment, I think, for me in my entire life. And it was haunting at the same time. And just to see all those people from all over the world that were sick and had loved ones with them was one of the most remarkable moments, I think, of the whole trip.
And I saw many people weeping from the beauty of that. First of all, you're placed into carts. And somebody from the Order of Malta pulls you in these carts throughout the city. And they called us malades, which is French for sick. And you go into the cart, and that's where you stay all day during the masses and the ceremonies. And at first, I rebelled against the cart. I said, no, I'm going to walk alongside the cart. They weren't having that. So I sat in the cart and just felt very self-conscious at the beginning, because the people that are surrounded near the grotto stare at you and wonder why you're in the carts and know that you're sick. And although I was sick from leukemia, I didn't feel I was as sick as some of the people that were being passed through on beds with IVs hooked to them. One day I was asked if I would like to be pushed in the cart by Father Cardinal Mahoney, who at the time was the Cardinal of Los Angeles. I was kind of nervous about that. When he came up, it was like we knew each other forever. He gave my husband and I a blessing. He was in full regale in his red robes and pushed us through the crowd. And as we were pushed through the crowd, people parted and made the sign of the cross.
He carries himself with a lot of confidence. So when he was pushing Wanda through the crowd, he had his red beanie on, his cardinal beanie, and his robe. And when he was pushing her, it was like the parting of the Red Sea.
I actually felt very honored and very undeserving of that day. Father Mahoney was with me the whole day, and we had some wonderful laughs. And later that night, my husband and I were asked by Cardinal Mahoney if we'd like to have dinner with him. In the middle of the grotto, there is a healing area where you wait to go into the water, and you're lined up probably about 2 hours before the water entrance opens. And once you are in there, you are asked to take your clothes off, and a robe is placed around you very discreetly. And you go into individual chambers that are marble, and it kind of looks like a big marble bathtub, and there are assistants on either side of you. And they take your robe off, and you sit into the water, and they dunk you into the water. You can first say prayers if you want, and they do pray over you. What I found to be one of the most amazing things at Lourdes is once you get out, you are completely dry. You go to put your clothes on, and you're not wet. you're maybe a little damp, but it's kind of like this miracle water has come over you and has dried you on its own.
I got dunked in the water also, and same experience, came out dry. For me, it didn't feel that cold because I'm an old surfer, so I'm used to cold water.
I felt something inside of me when I went into the water. I felt such a blessing that God was with me during that time. And when I got out of the water, I felt changed in some way, although I didn't know how. The spirituality and the beauty and the immense sadness for all the sick people that around me gave me a new perspective on my life and a new appreciation of my disease. I knew that God was with me every step of the way. When I got home from being dipped into the water, I went to see my doctor, and before I left for Lourdes, they did a bone marrow biopsy, and I had disease left in the marrow. So that meant I'd have to go through more chemotherapy when I got home, and that's what I was expecting.
When we returned from Lourdes, as always, we had a doctor appointment, and we never looked forward to going to the doctor. We were hoping to hear good news, but I wasn't anticipating any kind of miraculous news.
So I had another bone marrow biopsy when I got home, and I was called to come in to see the doctor. And when I got in there to the room, there were other people in. There were teaching assistants. There were nurses. I'd never seen so many people in a room, and I wasn't sure why. When my doctor came in, he told me there was no disease left in the marrow. He knew I was going to Lourdes, and I asked him, what do you think this was from? And he said, I think it was from Lourdes, Wanda, and I think you just had a miracle.
Thanks so much for being a good listener this morning. You too, Jimmy G. Thanks for listening to me.
You got it. Happy Mother's Day weekend.
Oh, thank you. Oh, I appreciate that. I'm looking forward to having a great dinner with my family and my mom. My husband always prepares us a great feast, so
wonderful.
Looking forward to that. And I wish you and your family a very happy Mother's Day.
Thank you very much.
If you'd like to drop us a line at the Call Me Catholic Show, you can send me an email to peggy@callmecatholic.com. We'd love to hear from you. And do come back next week. Same day, same time, same station. Until then, I'm Peggy Normandin. But you can, you know, call me Catholic. I gotta have faith, faith, faith.